These are large fraud rings or criminals, and they're stealing from hundreds and hundreds of people on a daily or weekly basis. So the money adds up. This case, I couldn't believe how much she made from this scam.
Introducing The Protectors, inside criminal minds from around the world. Presented by the IAFCI, leaders in safeguarding consumers from fraud and scams for more than 50 years. And now your hosts, International President Mark Solomon and Chairman of the Board Michael Carroll.
Hello, everybody. This is Mike Carroll, International Chairman of the International Association of Financial Crimes Investigators. How you doing, everyone? I am with Mark Solomon, our International President. Mark, how you doing today?
Michael, I'm doing great. And, here we are at the end of May. And I'll tell you what, really excited for the IFCI. A lot of great stuff going on. International conference coming up in August. Podcasts, like I said, rave reviews. I was just at the Connecticut IFCI conference, and that's where I actually ran into these next two guests. They're actually, I've known them for a long time and friends of mine, but they did a great presentation. But before we get to that, Mike, you know what? We got to say thank you to our sponsor, LifeVibe.us. So today's episode of Protectors is brought to you by LifeVibe.us, a champion of the Made in America movement.
Absolutely, Mark. With over 30 years of excellence, LifeVibe.us prides itself on being a 100% debt-free, privately held e-commerce powerhouse, offering products made right here in the great USA.
Yeah, Mike, and they're not just selling products. They're out there creating a safer environment for you and your family with ingredients that you could trust.
And let's not forget, LifeVibe.us brings you exceptional products without the unnecessary markups. So why not start making a positive impact on your health and wallet today? Visit LifeVibe.us.
All right. On to the show, Mike.
Mark, before you bring on our guests, I'm just going to bring out a public service announcement. All right? Okay. If you get a call from a credit card issuer, do not call that number back. Go to the back of your credit card and call that number. Yeah. That's my tip of the day.
All right. Yeah, it sounds like maybe somebody tried to scam you recently, Mike.
Almost. Did not get away with it.
Didn't get it. All right.
30 years experience in law enforcement helped out.
All right. Well, listen, our next two guests are veterans of law enforcement in Connecticut. She has been a member of the Stamford Police Department for 7 years and has been investigating financial crimes for more than four. Prior to law enforcement, she worked at a banking industry for 11 years, working in the BSA department with anti-money laundering and fraud efforts. He is a 17-year veteran of the Stamford Police Department and has worked financial crimes for 13 years. He's a task force officer with the FBI's cyber unit in New Haven, Connecticut. We'd like to welcome to the show Detective Vanessa Lynn and Detective Mike Stempien of the Stamford, Connecticut Police Department. Welcome to the show, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much. Glad to be here.
All right. Well, listen, guys, I have to tell you, when I was at the International, I know both of you and what incredible investigators you are. But this case, you know, sometimes you just step into a fraud or a scam. And I wanted the audience to hear this type of case because it didn't start as a financial crime investigation. So, Vanessa, can you kind of tell us how this case initiated with the Stamford Police Department?
Sure. Yeah, this actually started back in January of 2023. It was a domestic violence call that patrol responded to between a boyfriend and a girlfriend. And patrol responded, did their investigation, arrested the boyfriend, took the girlfriend to the hospital. Turns out the girlfriend is pregnant. Boyfriend had held a gun up to her pregnant belly. So she gave consent for patrol to go back to the apartment and search for this gun. And while they were searching, they found a lot more than they were expecting. They ended up finding over 100 payment cards that weren't in either of the two names. They found 5 locked safes, stacks of cash randomly around the apartment, a couple of fake driver's licenses, and 5 cell phones.
Wow.
So this started with domestic violence investigation by like patrol, and then they would call you, being experts in financial crimes, to come out and say, you know, take a look at what they got?
Yes. Yeah, so Mike actually responded out there and took a look and helped patrol seize everything. And then once everything was back at the police department, we did numerous search warrants. and including on those five safes that they had seized. And as it turns out, there was $733,000 in cash in total found in the apartment.
Wow.
Oh, man. Yeah. That must have taken half the night to count that.
Especially when you got to count it twice.
It takes a long time, yes.
So, Mike, you actually were the first detective to arrive at the scene there. And did you have any suspicions at all? I mean, you've been doing this for, 17 years and 13 years and with the FBI task force. I mean, was it immediately known what type of fraud he was involved in?
No. So this was a real head scratcher at first. I mean, obviously, we had over 100 cards and other people's names and all this money. So we knew it was, obviously some kind of scam was afoot. But we, at the time, had no idea what kind of particular thing it was. There's so many scams these days. We weren't sure what exactly he was operating in. But fortunately, we had all his phones. And surprisingly, he didn't even have a computer or like a notepad with, his own notes. That was kind of surprising. All this was being done on cell phones, basically.
Hey, Mike, let me ask you, bringing all the stuff back to your department, you got cards, you got phones, you got cash. What was the first direction that you went on this investigation? Which way did you go first?
So we kind of did two things at the same time. We started to process these phones. We did search warrants on the phones to figure out kind of what was on there, what kind of texts and records. And then also we sent search warrants to, we started with the payment card companies. Of the 100 cards, I think, the majority of them came back to like maybe three different companies. So it kind of made our life a little easier. And then it was kind of, we were just waiting for these records to come back to say, what kind of activity is going on these cards that is going to paint a picture as to, what this guy was doing.
Yeah. And Mike, you and Vanessa both have been in law enforcement, with Stanford PD throughout your career. And, a lot of people in the public just think, you go there, you're investigating a crime, and, I could just go through their cell phones. But it's not that simple. It's in the state of Connecticut, you have to do full-blown search warrants to even access it, get into it. Vanessa, how time-consuming was this case when it came to the amount of search warrants that you had to obtain? And how many, do you remember how many you actually had to write for this investigation?
It was very time-consuming. I believe we wrote somewhere between 15 and 20 search warrants in total for this case because there were five cases. We needed one search warrant per case. There were five phones. We needed one search warrant per phone. There were, as Mike said, I think three or four different companies that the payment cards were based out of. So we had to write a search warrant for each one of those. I believe we wrote a couple that unfortunately didn't lead us anywhere as well. But I want to say in total is about 15 to 20. So it did take some time.
And Mike, Vanessa, let me ask you this. How long you think when you initiated the investigation that you determined what these scammers or fraudsters were actually doing?
Everyone thinks, they watch CSI, they think, we do a search warrant, we get the records back immediately. It's taken, weeks, couple weeks per bank, so we're sending these search warrants out and then we're kind of waiting for the results to come back. So it wasn't immediate. It was probably a couple of weeks, I would say.
Yeah. So Mike and Vanessa, was the suspect wanting to get his money back? I could imagine if he did return to the house at some point, he must have been looking for that cash and probably kind of realized he was in a world of trouble.
Yeah, he didn't return to the house, actually. He ended up incarcerated
in custody because of the violent domestic violence. Oh, that's good. Good. Excellent. So he didn't have an opportunity to complain about his money, I guess, right?
And he knew we had taken it. He knew at that point that he had taken it, having phone calls while in prison. He knew that we had taken everything that they had.
Mike, what was the first big break in the case where the scheme started to unfold and you could see what he was doing?
I think once we got the records of one of those cards from one of the banks, it had, maybe 30 cards that we had in our possession, and we got the records for all those. And then at that point, we started looking through these records, and it was just so clear that all the money on these cards was coming in from DoorDash. So that kind of was our first clue as to, okay, he's doing something with DoorDash people. And there were names involved, just kind of like a name, not a date of birth, not an address, just a person's name. So we had to kind of pick and choose some of the most unique names of this list to kind of make sure that we would be calling, you know, the right person that was listed on this DoorDash payment onto the card. So we would start calling a couple of these people and we'd say, hey, are you a DoorDash driver? And they'd say, yes, I am. And we said, did you kind of get scammed or did something happen? And then these people started telling us, you know, the story of what happened. And basically all of them pretty much told us the exact same story that happened to them.
Oh, Mike, I was thinking that the suspects were ordering food from DoorDash and just paying with it with stolen credit card numbers or credit cards. But this went in a different direction.
Yeah, because the amounts that were coming in were kind of, you know, like several hundred dollars to, you know, low thousands, like $1,000, $2,000, $3,000. And one of the lines on this thing where it said DoorDash, it said like driver gig payments. So that kind of clued us in that it was something related to DoorDash drivers.
Well, Mike and Vanessa, I've seen Mark order food for lunch, and $200 is not unusual.
Hey,
for him.
Really? Really? You had to go
I'm
there.
I'm just saying.
You know, Mike and Vanessa saw me recently at the conference, and I've lost around 30
you are
pounds.
Losing a few
so,
pounds,
yeah,
man.
Right. Yeah, yeah. I could lose another 30. It'd be great. But
we noticed that. Yeah. So,
I haven't gotten any better looking, but at least I'm a little thinner, I guess, you know. So, but hey, Vanessa, I don't want to, we can't identify this individual because the case is ongoing. And again, all people are presumed innocent until they're convicted of a crime. So, but not mention this individual's name, but was he on law enforcement's radar by anyone? I mean, was there any investigation going on with him? Did he have previous criminal history? Anything that you saw that would have set off red flags for law enforcement?
Not at all. No, not at all. If it had not been for this domestic incident, I don't know how much longer he would have been able to get away with this, because all of the victims, as it turns out, or the ones we were able to contact, were out in California. So even if they were filing their, you know, police reports with their local police department, it never would have connected back to us. So we never would have known.
And Mike, I'd like to follow up here. You know, no criminal history. He's not on the radar. But did he have any relationship to DoorDash?
No, we asked them and, you know, they couldn't find any ties. This wasn't any sort of like insider job or anything like that. He just kind of made this scam happen on his own, kind of without any kind of insider info.
Incredible.
Hey, Mike, was it just DoorDash? Or was it other food services like Uber or just DoorDash?
If there were any Uber, I'm not remembering it. It might have been, you know, like single digit ones. I think the main thing was DoorDash. He had this nice little scheme going. There were about 1,700 transactions in total involving like 400 different individuals. So he was just kind of on repeat with this scam for months here.
And Mike, the 400 all were employed by DoorDash?
Yeah, we're all DoorDash. There was a little bit of a hiccup,
wow.
Obviously. Well, let me explain what the scam was so we can kind of understand it here. So what this guy would do is he would place an order for a DoorDash order, you know, name with a random address in California and then a restaurant nearby. So that would trigger one of the DoorDash drivers to start going to pick up the order and deliver it to the address, just like anything. And the DoorDash app would have, you know, if there's a problem with your driver, here's who he is and you can kind of contact him. So with another phone, as this order is taking place, he would spoof the phone number to the legitimate DoorDash number, call these drivers. So on these drivers' phone, it's showing up as DoorDash on their phone. They have no idea it's not the actual DoorDash number. They pick up, and he says, hey, listen, you know, you got to stop this order right now. There's been an issue. There was a stolen card used to place it. We've frozen the customer's account. We've frozen your account until we can figure out if you're involved or not. We're going to send you a verification link or, you know, a link that you need to go on to kind of verify yourself. So these drivers, they think now they're, you know, part of something and their employer is accusing them of something. So they're eager to clear their name. So they go to this link that our suspect provides to them. And basically it's a phishing site. You know, he had several different sites that looked like, I guess, a DoorDash login. They punch in their info and boom, it goes straight to him. So now he has their account info. He can then go on the DoorDash app, like sign in as them, and now he's seeing their payment information. Obviously, these drivers are doing deliveries. They're accumulating, you know, money in their account, and he's going in and he's just siphoning those funds out and pushing them onto these payment cards that we found at his place. So he's basically changing their bank info to these cards that he's in possession of. And then even worse, once he does that, he'll say, okay, you know, by the way, we're offering a kind of a bonus situation. If you do, you know, X number of rides, we'll give you, you know, some kind of bonus or whatever to kind of incentivize them to keep working, you know. So then they're doing a few more rides, they're earning more money, and then he's stealing that. He's coming back and stealing that. And then he's kind of warning them to say, hey, listen, you know, due to this, kind of your paycheck might be delayed a couple times, you know, just be aware of that. That way, when their paycheck doesn't come on Monday or whenever it is, they're not, you know, super suspicious, much like, you know, the wire frauds where they try to hit the people over the weekend because they're not really checking the accounts or whatever. So very, very slick little scam.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, you know, I'll never give a criminal, you know, any justice, but, you know, they're very determined. They're very creative in these schemes. And, you know, we've seen everything, romance scams, you guys as well. I mean, you're investigating this on a daily basis, but the ingenuity of this, if they could only use it towards positive stuff and lawful stuff, you know, they'd probably be very successful businessmen, you know?
Absolutely.
So, Vanessa, one thing I wanted to, you guys both pointed out in this investigation, I think, Mike, you mentioned about he picked victims in California. The suspect was living in Connecticut. So, you know, if they were to file a report, the loss, maybe, I don't know, maybe somebody lost $1,000 or, you know, but it sounds like this criminal hit so many people at small dollar amounts. And here he is, you got $700,000 in a suitcase in his house. And this is the problem. And I think you guys see it every single day in law enforcement where these $1,000 thefts are not isolated incidents. These are large fraud rings or criminals, and they're stealing from hundreds and hundreds of people on a daily or weekly basis. So the money adds up. This case, I couldn't believe how much she made from this scam.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. If each one of these people filed a report with their local police department, some of them are, the amounts are so small, they probably wouldn't have gotten investigated at all, to be honest.
Yeah.
They weren't all from the same town in California either. So there would have been just no way to connect them back to him also, even if they were investigated. Because the other thing with this was not only were there 400 different individuals working for DoorDash that were getting scammed, but their payments were going on to cards that were not in the suspect's name. So he had all these payment cards in other people's name that he had stolen their identities to create these cards in these accounts that they were attached to. So even if they were investigated, they would come back to this other person's name that had absolutely nothing to do with it, whose identity he had stolen.
Wow.
Yeah, Vanessa, Mike, I have to go with what Mark said a few seconds ago. I'm trying to think, how do these suspects come up with these scams? I mean, is he sleeping and 3 a.m. he jumps up, wait a minute, I got an idea. DoorDash, I'll take over their account holders, their workers' accounts. It's just, you know, I have a problem getting on DoorDash and ordering food, let alone this guy doing this scam. It's unbelievable.
Making fake websites and yeah, and phishing and oh my God.
Can you tell us right now what's the status of the case?
When's his next court, David? I think it's basically two separate charges. Like obviously he's got charges for the domestic issue and then with this issue, and they're both in July, Vanessa?
Yeah, I believe the end of July.
Yeah, and Mike, you said was it the FBI task force assisted in the arrest of the subject?
Yeah, I mean, so we started this in January, that's when this first happened. We're doing these search warrants working this case, and I think we finally got an arrest warrant in June. That's kind of when we found we had everything together, kind of wrote it together, worked with the prosecutors. And so we got a $2 million bond issued on this warrant, which
wow,
is
wow.
massive in the scope of bonds. I mean, that's like, you know, probably the highest financial crime bond that I've ever seen and probably one of the highest bonds that we get ever, you know, in Stanford here. So we enlisted the help because this guy was now located in New York of the FBI Safe Streets Task Force out of Rye, and they made quick work of this guy. I think they scooped him up in less than 24 hours, which was great for us.
Hey, Mike, I was just curious, what was the average loss per victim?
He would hit some victims, you know, more than once. But I think, you know, on average, it was anywhere between like 500 to maybe 2,000, something like that. Like maybe a little less, generally like a paycheck period. You know, we're talking, these people are doing deliveries, they're accumulating some money. Obviously, it's not a ton of money, but obviously it's a lot to them. And that's, you know, we took that seriously. These people were working hard for this money, and then this guy comes and steals it.
So, Vanessa, you know, I know the case is still ongoing, but if this person is convicted, you know, the thing to recognize here is this started with domestic violence, and domestic violence is a very serious issue. You know, like I said, the allegations are very severe. Was there ever a firearm recovered?
There was, yes. Yep. In their search, okay. They did recover the firearm involved, yeah.
Yeah, and I just want to say to our listeners, you know, this podcast is dedicated to, you know, financial crimes, scams, frauds, cyber crimes. But, you know, listen, Mike and I both were in law enforcement for many years, and Mike and Vanessa are warriors that are still out there fighting the good fight. But, you know, if anyone is facing an issue of domestic violence or being threatened, you know, you don't have to live like that. Call the police, get help. There's a lot of services out there. We can't forget that this all started from a horrific incident. I'm sure that victim was terrorized. And I just wanted to say that to our audience.
Good point, Mark. And I want to go a step further related to financial crimes. If you believe you're a victim of a financial crime or you're caught up in some type of scam or fraud, reach out to your local police. There's two great investigators that know financial crimes that can help you. But sometimes people might be ashamed to report something where they've lost money, but don't, you know, report it.
Yeah. All right, Mike. Well, we're going to continue on in just a second, but we want to give another shout out to our sponsor, LifeVibe.us.
You're right, Mark. We're midway through another episode of The Protectors, and it's time once again to let our listeners know about LifeVibe.us. If you're seeking a trustworthy manufacturer that truly cares about your family's health and financial freedom, LifeVibe.us is your go-to source.
That's right, Mike. And LifeVibe.us ensures that every product is safe for the consumer. Okay? It's crafted with care and without any harmful chemicals in their products.
So join us in celebrating a company that's good for the country, our kids, and everything we believe in. Head over to LifeVibe.us for products you can trust at prices that make sense.
All right. Well, you're listening to the Protectors Podcast with the IFCI with Mike and Mark. We're here with our special guests, Vanessa Lynn and Mike Stempia from the Stanford Police Department. And we've been talking about this DoorDash case. And, you know, I was thinking during the break there, you know, I hope this individual, if he's convicted, serves a lengthy prison sentence for the domestic violence first. And then also, you know, targeting 400 victims, over 400 victims, and almost getting $1 million. I sure hope the judge, when he does get out, makes him work for DoorDash for like, you know, a year without getting paid. And, you know, it harms that company. It harms their employees. And what do you think about that, Mike and Vanessa?
Sounds like a good idea to me.
Of course, then again, I probably wouldn't trust him with being an employee in my company. So, but anyway. So, Mike and Vanessa, I wanted to just ask you guys a quick question here. And how prevalent is financial crime, cyber crimes at your agency and in Connecticut in general?
It's very prevalent in Stanford. We get, I would say, on average, probably 3 to 5 of these types of calls a shift, I would say, every day.
Wow.
Some sort of identity theft, some sort of credit card fraud, some sort of scam, some sort of financial crime or financially related crime, multiple times a shift every day, for sure.
And Vanessa, I noticed in your bio that you worked for a financial institution for about 11 years prior to coming on the department. Did that background help you when you started working financial crimes for your department?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely, it did. I was familiar with, you know, just what I was looking at. To put it simply, I knew, you know, when people would bring in their statements or they would describe the scams or bring in some sort of paperwork that they had, I was familiar with all of it. I had investigated those types of things from the other side, from the banking side. I had seen those kinds of transactions and reported them to law enforcement myself. So it definitely helped when I switched over to this side.
Well, I'll tell you, I'm very happy you chose a career in law enforcement and bring in your previous experience into the Stanford Police Department is such a benefit to law enforcement for you to have that background. And I have to comment that, you know, with Mr. Mike Stempien, it's in his genes because I worked with his father for more than 20 years. And his father was one of the most incredible investigators when it came to home improvement scams. I mean, and all frauds. And he was an incredible person, but what a great investigator too. So I know Mike followed in his father's footsteps, and I'm sure his dad is very proud of that.
Yeah, no, he absolutely is. I sent him all the links on Facebook when the Advocate articles, when they, you know, make an arrest, and he's proud, and I'm, you know, happy to have him proud of me.
Yeah, I know that feeling. I did that with my dad throughout my career. He passed a month ago, but now I give my brother a call every day and we talk shop. So, Vanessa, on the Protectors podcast, what we always love doing, in addition to sharing either case studies or providing education and awareness, is give some tips back to the public. And in this case, this is a very tricky scheme. Have you figured out any way or how these employees, should the drivers handle this situation? Or maybe tomorrow it's another company where the scheme comes in and they attack their drivers. So do you have any advice that we could give people in this line of work so they don't fall victim?
Sure. One thing I would say that they should do, anyone that's going to be driving for these kinds of companies, whether it be DoorDash, Uber, Lyft, what have you, that one thing that they should do before they start driving is talk to someone at the company and ask them what the protocol is for this type of situation, because fraud happens on these kinds of companies all the time. So if someone does make a purchase with a fraudulent credit card, what is the company going to do? Are they going to call me? Are they going to email me? Are they going to ask for my personal information? Are they not? You know, will they send a link? What's actually going to happen, so they know what to expect, so that if they get a phone call that's fraudulent, they will know the difference between what should be happening and what the suspect is actually trying to get from them.
And I'll add in as well here another tip. If you're getting a hyperlink, if someone's texting you a hyperlink and it's coming from like a real number and not one of those short codes, just a couple digits, scrutinize that link. You know the link to your real website, it should be DoorDash.com. So there's no reason why you should be going to some website that's, you know, not that website. Basically, they went to the phishing link. They went to a website that this guy was in control of. And then as far as the verification codes, those verification codes, they say, do not give this code to anyone. They say it with the text. So just be aware, do not provide those verification codes to anybody else.
That is some great advice there, and I'm glad we're able to share that with our listeners and then those that are in the field. You know, it's come to a point now where you just can't trust anything you see on a caller ID screen. Your phone number can be spoofed. Your phone can be SIM swapped. You have voice recognition. You have a voice cloning. You have facial deep fakes now. So once somebody starts asking for personal information or account information, that's where the bells have to go off. And you should never provide that from an incoming call, text, or email. Disconnect. Call the company back on a known phone number or a legitimate email and inquire. Listen, Mike and Vanessa, I want to thank you all for sharing this story with us. Thank you for what you do every day out there, protecting our communities. And, you know, be safe out there. The world's crazy sometimes, but you guys are on the right side of the fence fighting the good fight. So thank you for everything that you do.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having us.
Thanks, Mark and Mike. Appreciate being here.
Vanessa and Mike, yeah, we probably should follow up down the road, see what the status is. If hopefully we could ask how much time this person got in custody, how many years, hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully we'll definitely have an update in a couple months, maybe. I'm sure by then we'll have some new scam that we'll be talking to you guys about.
Hey, let me give one plug for the IFCI. I know both of you are members, right, of the International Association of Financial Crime Investigators. Are you guys going to the international conference in Henderson?
I don't think we're going to the international, but we just got back from the Connecticut one. We had a great time.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Yeah,
I saw the itinerary. 350 or more attendees. That's unbelievable. That was a great conference.
Well, I think we should start a GoFundMe page for Mike and Vanessa if the training budget is cut.
That's a great case study.
Maybe we could get them out to, like I said, this is a great case. And I could tell you that, boy, the Stanford PD is very lucky to have two great investigators like that, top notch. So, all right, guys, we'll be safe. And we're going to wrap up another episode of the Protectors Podcast. And, Mike, where can listeners find our podcast?
Apple Podcast, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts, you'll find us. We hope you take that, sign up, and listen to our biweekly podcast, and we'd love to have you on board.
Yep. And, you know, if you want to reach out to us or you have a case that maybe you're an investigator, you're a subject matter expert, or maybe you're a victim of a crime and you want to share your story with us, please reach out to us at IAFCIProtectorsPodcast@gmail.com. We want to thank our listeners. Like I said, this podcast would not be as successful if it wasn't for our listeners tuning in every week. Always think about subscribing. You can get it right on your phones. You can listen to it in the shower, you know, while you're driving to work, or if you're just relaxing home, cutting the grass. We'd love to hear from you, and thank you for supporting us. And you know what, Mike? We also have to give one more shout out to LifeVibe.us. Not only for sponsoring the Protectors, but also because of their unwavering commitment to the American dream. This is a company with a 38-year track record of independence, integrity, and deep-seated belief in what America stands for.
Indeed, Mark, LifeVibe.us is a testament to American ingenuity and resilience to bring you and your family products that are not only safe and affordable, but also can contribute to a healthier, more sustainable future.
All right, Mike. Well, listen, I'm about ready to sign off. I want to thank our listeners once again. I'm Mark Solomon, International President of the IFCI in Connecticut.
And I'm Mike Carroll from Chicago. You know, Mark, I'm getting a little hungry. I got to order something from DoorDash. Can you give me your card number, please?
Yeah, not happening.
Oh, okay. All right, Mike Carroll from Chicago. We'll see you again.
Thanks for listening to today's podcast. Remember, as you join the fight to protect our citizens, you're not alone. With more than 6,500 members from around the world, the men and women of the IAFCI are standing together with you. To learn more or to join the IAFCI, please visit our website at www.iafci.org. The Protectors Podcast is produced by Modified Media and is available for free wherever you listen to podcasts. The hosts and guests' opinions are their own and do not reflect those of management, employers, or sponsors. Listeners are encouraged to contact law enforcement if they suspect being a victim of a crime.